This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a grand concert of pianos, a celebration of the Bard's 450th birthday, or a little fun with numbers, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Loyola University is ground zero as the 2014 New Orleans International Piano Competition gets underway beginning on Sunday. Pianists from around the globe will be in town as the Musical Arts Society of New Orleans, MASNO, celebrates the 25th competition. Joining me now is MASNO's Executive Director, Dan Weilbacher. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Diane. It's great to be here.
You're celebrating a silver anniversary.
Right.
What are your thoughts as you reach this milestone?
Oh, well, it's amazing that it's going on this long, that I've been involved with it. God, looking back over 25 years, it's incredible, the growth of the competition. We started off at the McFarland Educational Center at Southern Baptist Hospital. It's no longer the Southern Baptist Hospital, but right there on Napoleon Avenue in Claiborne. For the first 2 years, I think we were there, if not the first 3 years. The audiences grew. We moved to the Contemporary Arts Center. We were there for 3 or 4 years. And when I took over, I moved it to UNO, where we stayed 3 or 4 years. And eventually, we outgrew the hall here. And we've been at Loyola since 1999. The first competition, we had 33 applicants. Prize money was $1,500, $1,500. And this year, we had 152 applicants. And the prize money is 10 times that, $15,000, $5,000.
So what do you owe the growth?
First of all, the fact that it's here in New Orleans. Everybody wants to come to New Orleans. And then, of course, the dedication of all the people from the beginning. And the idea of being able to share something this concentrated in the form of a week-long festival and piano competition, it's hard not to be excited about it and passionate about it, which I have been and people involved have been for all these years now and will continue to be.
So now, how does it work? You said you had 152 applicants?
Right. That's almost a record. I think 1 year we had 159 or something like that. I was concerned this year because last year was the first year we did not have the competition. It had been an annual event up until last year, and for various reasons, as the competition has grown in size, it's now a biennial event. So I was concerned that having that year off in 2013, that people would forget about us, that we would not be on the map anymore. But we certainly were. That didn't hurt us by being off last year. And from that 152, it's all CDs that people send in, recordings. Raymond Gitz and I get together, and we spend 4 or 5 days listening to, in this case, 152. And we get it down to around 30. And we don't discuss it. We don't know who these people are, what their backgrounds are, how old, male, female. We just don't know anything. We just listen. And we cut it down without discussion at the end. We put in our top people and we come up with 30. So those 30 CDs then go to 3 other people to listen to. Those 3 people have to rank those 30 at the top 12 places. And then Raymond and I also come in again to rank our favorite through our 12th favorite. That's how we get it down to the 12 that we have here.
Who are they and where do they come from?
Of course, they're all brilliant. We have, for the first time, I think somebody from Austria is coming. We have a Spaniard. We have an Italian, Chinese, a Taiwanese, a Korean, and American. So that's 7 different countries, I think, if I've not forgotten somebody. Yeah. It's always amazing how good these people are, and every year they seem to get better and better. One of the big things this year is that this is the first time that one of the students who had been a student in the New Orleans Piano Institute is actually one of the 12 semifinalists in the big competition. So that's a real landmark for us, and we're very, very proud of that and excited.
Who was that?
A guy named Kenny Broberg. He'll be playing as one of the 12 semifinalists this year.
So, oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. It says a lot for the quality of the Institute itself.
Now, when you open on Sunday, you open with a recital, I believe, by a former winner?
Right. The last competition, which was in 2012, Viktor Valkov will be playing the opening recital. He'll also be one of the jury members as well this year. Viktor is, I believe, Bulgarian and was quite an exciting artist. Especially, I'm thinking back when we did Concerto Showcase in 2013 with the LPO Carlos Prieto conducted last time. Carlos was very, very interested in the Bartok First Concerto. which is rarely heard, extremely difficult, very complex, and very challenging for the orchestra, for the conductor, for the performer. Prieto was so taken with Valkov's performance that when Valkov comes on October, I think, 30th this year to play his subscription concert with LPO, he'll be doing the Bartok First again. He was very unusual back in 2012 because his repertoire had a very wide range. He was doing Couperin pieces and Rameau pieces, pieces without measure, without any meter to it at all from the early days. It was all fascinating the way he sculpted the sound and brought it together. So he's very, very interesting, very wide-ranging repertoire. He'll be playing Beethoven Moonlight Sonata, the Schumann Symphonic Etudes, and Hungarian Rhapsody. He's doing his own transcription of the Wagner Liebestod from Tristan and Isolde. Should be a very, very wonderful program on that Sunday afternoon.
Valkov opens with a recital on Sunday. We have the competition Monday through...
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, starting at 7 o'clock, will be the first semifinal round. Four of the pianists will play each of those three nights for 35 minutes. And then all 12 of them return on Thursday and Friday night, 6 a night, for the second semifinal round. And they each play for 20 minutes on Thursday night and Friday night, starting at 7 o'clock. And at Friday night's performance, the jury then decides which three will perform in the finals on Sunday at 2 o'clock.
And we find out the winner when?
They each play for 50 minutes on Sunday. So around 5:30, the jury will at that point go and cast their ballots. And we come out on stage and announce who gets what.
And the grand prize is?
Well, the grand prize is $15,000 in cash and performance fees. The first place when it comes back to play with the LPO in a subscription concert. They play with the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra, one of their subscription concerts, Lafayette's Acadiana Symphony Orchestra. The biggest jewel in that crown is a Wigmore Hall recital in London, which is very, very difficult to get in. And so that's attracted a lot of people. Of course, all three finalists will come back on March the 18th next year for Concerto Showcase, with Carlos Prieto conducting the LPO.
Is this a free opportunity for the general public?
In the afternoons, we have master classes and lectures during the afternoon, which are free and open to the public. Victor Valkov's recital, and for all the competition rounds, there is a charge.
Those are ticketed events?
Yes, ticketed events. Yeah.
What are you hoping audiences will come away with after this unique piano experience?
A sense of awe at how talented these people are. What great, capable musicians we have coming up the line right now. Piano music is in very good hands, I like to say, going forward.
Dan Weilbacher, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Dan Weilbacher, Executive Director of the Musical Arts Society of New Orleans. The 2014 New Orleans International Piano Competition and Keyboard Festival runs July 20th through 27th at Loyola University's Roussel Hall. For more information, visit the Masno website, masno.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane is on a short list of companies to be visited by a team from the University of Warwick and the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. The festival is one of 14 North American organizations being toured by this team from the United Kingdom as part of a reverse pilgrimage celebrating the 450th birthday of the Bard. And joining me to talk about this trip and a special presentation are Dr. Paul Prescott, Associate Professor at the University of Warwick, and Reverend Dr. Paul Edmondson, Head of Research with the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. Welcome.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you very much.
This is quite a treat. New Orleans is on your radar as you travel North America this summer. Tell us about the Shakespeare on the Road team and why you are in town.
We're in town because we're doing this two-month project, a 10,000-mile road trip across North America, and we're interested in the very special relationship between America and Shakespeare.
There are four of us. We're joined by AJ and Melissa Leon, who head up a company called Misfit Inc., and they're building our digital platform, which is the main, as it were, living expression of the project, shakespeareontheroad.com, and there people can find regular updates as we go through reverse pilgrimage.
So how did New Orleans get to be so lucky?
We had a map of the states in front of us, and we tried to identify all of the Shakespeare festivals across North America, and we quickly realized that you actually couldn't, because no one knows how many there are. And this is a really big part of our story, is that it's an astonishing phenomenon. Every summer across North America, Shakespeare bursts out in local parks, in theaters, in found spaces, and no one in Britain knows about this. I suspect very few Americans know the full extent of it. So what we wanted to do was to celebrate all of this work. So there are lists of the extant Shakespeare festivals. None of them are comprehensive. But we had a list in front of us of all the festivals that we knew of. And then we had a map. And then we thought, what are the most interesting places in America? And if there was a festival there, we then checked out that festival and we saw the kind of work it was doing. And we saw the work that was happening at Tulane. And we thought it was fascinating for a number of reasons, not the least of which was its educational remit in this city. And of course, we just wanted to come to New Orleans as well.
Aha.
And one of its educational programs has the same name as our project, Shakespeare on the Road.
Now, tell me about the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. What is it?
We look after the five Shakespeare houses intimately associated with Shakespeare and his family. We were founded in 1847. We welcomed a succession of visitors from all over the world for all of that time, but people have been coming to Stratford for at least 2.5 centuries. Two early American visitors were none other than Thomas Jefferson and John Quincy Adams, who visited Shakespeare's birthplace in the 1770s. Jefferson knelt on the floor and kissed the ground when he was in the birthplace. John Quincy Adams writes about taking a chip off what was allegedly called Shakespeare's chair during his visit. So we present in perpetuity the house in which Shakespeare was born. We have a huge archive and library facility which tells the story of Stratford-upon-Avon from its earliest time and makes available 55,000 volumes relating to Shakespeare's work life and times, including 1,000 rare books from the period. And we also have educational programmes which we run throughout the year. We take a lead in celebrating Shakespeare's birthday, and every year we have many well-wishing greetings from around the world. So this year we wanted to do something really special and unusual to celebrate the 450th anniversary, hence Shakespeare on the Road.
And that is your reverse pilgrimage.
That's the reverse pilgrimage. And a really curious, quirky part of the story is in the earliest time when the birthplace was up for public auction in 1847, P.T. Barnum of Barnum and Bailey Circus later in the 1860s said that he wanted to buy it at the time and threatened to do so if the people of Great Britain didn't save the house in which Shakespeare was born. And he said he'd put it on his circus wagon and take it around the States. So that's rather enthused our journey, this idea of taking the birthplace on tour, as it were, the idea of Stratford on tour around the States in that sort of P.T. Barnum sort of way. So he's been an interesting presider ever so slightly as part of this project.
Shakespeare's hometown, his birthplace, Stratford-upon-Avon. Where exactly is it located?
It's 100 miles northwest of London and about 25 miles southeast of Birmingham, which is our second city in England. But as you know, nothing's very far away in England. We're a tiny country.
In Shakespeare's time, it had about 2,000 inhabitants. Now it has about 29,000. And that's the story we want to tell. And that's what we want to celebrate and shine a torch on and feel part of during this summer ahead of us.
What's been your experience here in New Orleans with the Shakespeare Festival at Tulane?
We've been very warmly welcomed, and we saw the company's version of the complete works of William Shakespeare, you know, which is this kind of abridgment.
Reduced Shakespeare company.
Where they do all the plays in about 96 minutes or something. So we had great fun at that. And we were particularly interested in what the three guys, it's three guys who perform in it.
Clinton, Brendan and Andy.
Indeed, what they brought to it from a Louisianan perspective, as it were. One of the things the guys said afterwards, we interviewed them for the digital platform, and they said that the Reduced Shakespeare Company who produced this thing, who wrote the script, have two different versions of it, and they like people who do the script to keep them distinct from each other. And the guys said, we didn't do that, we just mixed them all up. That seemed distinctly gumbo, you know, that kind of mixture, that kind of like, oh, well, do it anyway. And they said very interesting things about audiences here, about New Orleans audiences. They love to be spoken to and directly addressed, and they're ready for it. They're ready for engagement, and they're ready for liveness. And I felt that.
I understand you also have a very special presentation for the New Orleans Shakespeare Festival.
We do. As part of the 450th anniversary, we're giving a 450th gift to all of the festivals, which is made from cedar wood from a tree that used to grow in the garden of Shakespeare's birthplace in Stratford-upon-Avon. It's been beautifully designed as a ring of a tree on which has been placed a bronze medallion of Shakespeare's head, gold-coloured, by an American artist, the sculptor Greg Wyatt, who's the sculptor in residence at St. John the Divine Cathedral in New York. So we're making this presentation to the Tulane Shakespeare Festival, and we're also doing talks in various places, including here in Tulane, about the project and about what we're doing.
Obviously, we want to tell people what we're doing, but part of the aim of the project is to capture the experience of Americans who are working on Shakespeare. So everywhere we go, we're recording interviews, many interviews of people we meet, and that might be artistic directors, it might be the guy who volunteers on the parking lot, without whom the show cannot happen. Because people need to park, right? So it's everyone within the ecology of a festival is of interest to us, because all of them in some way are giving of their time and experience to make Shakespeare happen. So we're capturing all of this, and we have some beautiful conversations already, and we're going to produce a radio documentary when we get home. Paul and I are also co-writing a book, provisionally entitled Maybe Bard in the USA. We're not sure, that to be discussed. If people want to experience it now as it's happening, the best place to go is to our digital platform, shakespeareontheroad.com.
The other thing we're inviting the festivals to do is to deposit some of their theatre archive in the library in Stratford-upon-Avon at the Shakespeare Centre over the next 2 years. So the 14 festivals to deliver the working script, photographs, reviews, other responses to the show to the Shakespeare Centre in 2014, 2015 and 2016 will then allow us in our archive to have a good sense of what Shakespeare was like in the States in performance over these two anniversary years.
Well, Dr. Paul Prescott with the University of Warwick and Reverend Dr. Paul Edmondson with the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust, thanks.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
You can see a photo of the wooden plaque, a gift of the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust, on our website, wwno.org. The complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged continues its run at the New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane through July 19th. School is out for summer, but that doesn't spell an end to learning, as numbers come in quite handy for a group of young actors. Crescent City Lights Youth Theater, in partnership with New Orleans Recreation Department Commission, NORDC, presents the local premiere of Main Street Kids Club, a Math Start musical. And joining me to talk about the mathematical concepts in this musical are actor Eli Zittler and Crescent City Lights founder and executive director Julie Condi. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
So how does math come into play in children's theater?
The Math Start musical is based on a wonderful series of books from the Main Street Kids Club series. And their author had the brilliant idea to put together six short segments of the books and put them together in a musical that's got music written by Scott Ferguson, who did the Schoolhouse Rock series of musicals. And it's very clever. So one of them discusses 100 days of school, and then the kids turn around and say, no, it's 100 days of cool. So it's a count up to 100, and that happens within, of course, the musical. Then there's how do you add and subtract when you are selling? So there's a whole lemonade stand situation. And they're doing that to raise money to refurbish their clubhouse.
Uh-huh. And how did you come to choose the musical?
I'm always on the lookout for new musicals, things that are written for children, for family entertainment. And this is a New Orleans premiere. This musical was just released. It's also being worked on right now, I understand, in Boston. And it relates to kids because it's all about kids working together in their own clubhouse that they built and what kids do when they have this thing that is all their own.
Eli, do you relate to the production?
Yeah. I've always found math to be really great and important too. And the show, it shows not only how math is important, but also how it's important with life skills, because math skills
equals life skills.
So tell us, what is your role in the production?
I'm Matthew, the leader of the Main Street Kids Club. I showcase some of the math, and I also let Toby into the club at the end of the production.
And Toby is?
Toby is the kid. At first, he's not so great at math, and he just moved here from Florida, and the members of the club don't really let him in to the club, and he gets really sad about that. But at the end, he showcases that he does have math skills and life skills. So we let him in the club, and it's a really great moment.
Now, Eli, did you think that math would be a part of your summer experience?
No, but it was, and I'm actually surprisingly happy about it.
Did you like math in school?
Yeah, I do like math.
What grade are you in?
I'm going into 7th grade. During this year in 6th grade, my math teacher was Monsieur Arnaud. He taught math and French, but it was the same in English, really. I go to a French school.
This is a French immersion school?
Yes.
You're pretty good at math.
Yeah, I am.
And what's real cool about the Main Street Kids Club Math Start musical is that it uses math concepts. So we're using graphs to show 100 days of school, to show how many sales happened for the lemonade. There's another song called Perry the Penguin that goes into negative integers. Everybody remembers how that was a tough concept to figure out. So what happens is Perry has 4 clams, but then he wants to save up to get a scooter, right?
Yeah.
And then when he saves up for the scooter, he also discovers that there's other ways to spend your money on candy and other things. So all of a sudden he has less than 4 clams. So we have a chart that calculates all the negative integers, and there's a cast member putting all those up on the board. So it's an interesting way to depict math that's fun.
And Eli, do you think that by appearing in this production that you are helping fellow classmates to learn math?
Yeah. And whether you're performing in it or seeing it, it really does help you learn about math.
There's a math quiz that kind of goes on between cast members and the audience. We've done one show with a small audience, and it was a lot of fun.
Artistic director Julie Condy and actor Eli Zitler with Crescent City Lights Youth Theater. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Main Street Kids Club, a Math Start musical, runs July 18th through 20th at Nordtie Tracy Theater. First floor, Gallier Hall, 545 St. Charles Avenue. Theater entrance on Lafayette Street. More info at crescentcitylights.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.